Hello everyone, welcome back to the Across the Park podcast. This is, if you've viewed our channel before or subscribed, this is the opposition preview. So if you're tuning into our channel looking for a All About Everton podcast, this isn't quite the one. We're going to be speaking to John from Cherry's Red Army. John, good to meet you, mate.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks for having me on. Feels a bit weird, this, because it's been a while since I've really done much talking about football with the international break, but looking forward to club football coming back.
You know what? It's funny you say that. Actually, I've really enjoyed it. it's been a tough season for us on off the pitch, so it's been quite refreshing for me to just have a week or so off football and just speaking to the kids with not being in a bad mood and all that. So normally I hate the international break, but I've got to admit I've actually quite enjoyed this one. But as you say, back to football. And again, for those who are looking for different football content, and again, we'll maybe get to know a little bit more about Bournemouth, please check out Cherry's Red Army. We've had these guys on a few times. Top podcast, genuine, authentic fan content. So please give them a follow if you're on YouTube. And obviously the tag is underneath. Is that the same tag for YouTube and Twitter, John?
Yeah, that's YouTube, Twitter. We're on Instagram as well, although we're on a little bit of a hiatus at the moment. Unfortunately, as many content creators find, sometimes you burn out, and we haven't produced much for the last sort of couple of months. But we will definitely be having a season review up, and we'll be back again for the start of next season. But yeah, do check out some of our content if you're interested in Bournemouth.
Super. But obviously, selfishly, John, we're here for your insight, a bit of backstory for the Evertonians who are tuning in. We're having a little chat off air then. John's actually lives in Manchester, based in Manchester. You probably gathered that from the accent. However, as a Bournemouth fan, I was just saying that, the guys I sit next to in the match has the opposite issue, that he's down in Bournemouth and he's travelling up to the Everton game. So it was quite funny that the opposite occurs here. So, John, I don't think you're getting down for this weekend's game, but I am going to obviously quiz you on all things Bournemouth, particularly since the last time we played at Goodison. We spoke off air. I'd caught up with one of your other content creators, or another member of your podcast, Kirk, last time. We spoke about it was a particularly difficult time for you guys. It was probably a good time for us to play you. You were in a bit of a state of flux in between styles. Iriola's still trying to enforce his methodology, his philosophy on the team. You didn't have a great day at Goodison, but it's fair to say that since then you've somewhat turned the corner.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that and our game after that one, which was actually, I'm remembering, was it before or after? Either way, it was the Everton match, and then we were also played Arsenal at home in succession. Yeah. That was a very bad couple of weeks, a very bad couple of fixtures for us, because we were just about to reach the point where we were like, okay, it's been 6 or 7 weeks of no wins. And we can see that something is there. We're encouraged by what we're seeing, particularly compared to the last few managers. But it's time to start turning what looks like some promising performances into a win. And while I wasn't confident going to the Everton game last time around, because we tend to not do very well at Goodison, going back many, almost the entire time we've been in the Prem, I was hoping for better than that. It was a really, really poor performance, a very comfortable 3-0 win for Everton. And that came off the back of, 4-0 loss at home to Arsenal. And then we went and lost 2-1 at home to Wolves after going 1-0 up, and we had a man sent off. Lewis Cook went and saw red, literally and metaphorically. So we were in a really bad spot, and thankfully things did turn around. But it was the Burnley game after that, the way we won 2-1, that if we hadn't got that win in that match, I think Iriola would have been very close to the sack. I don't think the management were ever really, the higher-ups were ever really close to dismissing him, because what more can you do if you've already gone for the new progressive manager and you ditched someone in Gary O'Neill, who would have kept us up. I think I don't have any issues in saying that Gary Neal would have kept us up. So obviously we moved him on, and he went to Wolves. He's doing a brilliant job at Wolves. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Wish him all the best, as most Bournemouth fans do. Mm. But it was close. I think once we got that Burnley win, we got thrashed by City, but can ignore that. We went on a lovely run, and it really did sort of push on from there. And it's been we've hit that long period of highs, took a bit of a dip, and now we're coming into some, you know, we've had a few more favorable fixtures recently, and we should just be comfortable for the rest of the season, and looking forward to what additions we can make and what we can push on to next season.
Yeah, fair play, and again, I'm somewhat envious of the position you're in. I mean, as I'm quick to point out to most people that we have on this podcast, we would be in a very similar position to you had we not been hit with a punt deduction, but we are where we are now. We've got to take our medicine, and hopefully there's no more of that medicine to come from the Premier League, if we're fortunate. I mean, again, the last time we were on, I spoke to Kirk about a few players that maybe you were hoping for more from, players that maybe hadn't featured as much under Iriola. Are there certain players that have stuck out in that run that have maybe been the big, the big orchestrators of, apart from the manager himself, of this turnaround? Who in particular has been, you know, stood out?
Well, I suppose one of the interesting ones has been that two of our, well, I think our two most expensive signings in summer were Tyler Adams, who's only just made his debut in the Premier League for us two weeks ago, and Alex Scott, who came in injured as well. And while he has come in and out, had another injury and been okay. Yeah, the youngster from Bristol City. Who's a real talent. I don't expect him to be at the club too much longer if he gets another couple of years experience with us, and we should, you know, do okay with selling him on. But it meant it was a bit of an issue in midfield because we were a little bit shorter than we wanted to be. And one of the things that's made a big difference is actually Ryan Christie, who typically has played right mid, maybe number 10, has sort of been forced to slot in on the double pivot with Lewis Cook. And they formed a really, really good partnership. When those two really sort of got going, that was the start of our really good run with the Burnley victory, the and all the ones after the Man City defeat, when we started going on and looked like one of the form teams in the league. That was sort of a nice base, combined with one of the few players in the league, a central defensive partnership that were working quite well in Marco Senesi, who's a bit more of a ball player, Ilya Zavani, who's played every second this season at centre-back, a youngster that's battled really well, gave us a much more solid base. Dominic Solanke is obviously the one that everyone will think of immediately when they think of a Bournemouth player, though, because, you know, he is one of the top scorers in the league. He was maybe a little bit unfortunate not to get called up to the squad this time around, but, you know, when you've only done it for half a season, I think it's fair enough that you're not necessarily going to be one of the first names picked. But, yeah, I think that spine has definitely helped. Other players have sort of had fits and starts and flashes of brilliance. Marcus Tavernier is a player that has shown things now and again from the wing. He was one of our players of the season last year. In fact, he arguably was our player of the season. He's just not looked quite at it this season. But you've got players like Luis Sinisterra that can come in, Justin Kluivert, a real handful. Sorry?
Justin Kluivert,
he plays in the 10. He's a guy that tends to just pop up with a goal now and again, but can often disappear in matches. He's not. He's a little bit more of a luxury than I would like, but even within the idea of a luxury player, he's not. He doesn't really show that much. He's the kind of player that if you give him room, he can absolutely, you know, ruin an opposition defensive setup. But if you don't give him that room, it's almost like playing with 10 men a bit of a time. Semenyo is another one that sort of come in and really looked like he can step up in a match. He's just got those physical attributes that he's really decent dribbler. He's got a good left and right foot shot on him, and can absolutely bully a fullback or a centre back if they're not quite up for it physically, as he has done to a few players this season.
Does he play off the left, Semenyo, then?
He typically plays off the right, typically. Okay. He is right-footed, but you know, he scored a few with his left foot this season, and he has swapped wings occasionally. He'll normally play off the right. More of an inside forward, definitely. But he would play that inside forward role off the left or the right because he's quite two-footed. I think it's been fortunate for us that we have had quite a few players that, while they haven't necessarily scored a massive amount of goals, there's quite a few players that are having impacts in games, which is important. I mean, you know, Solanke's running away with it in the goal scoring figures, but you know, there's quite a few players that have got two or three goals, so it all sort of like the little bits here and there that, that everyone sort of is helping out with. But yeah, I'd say those are the sort of the players that have shone so far this year.
One player I'm curious about, because Kirk actually brought him up in the last podcast, and he's a player that I rated quite highly, but you didn't mention him then, and it doesn't seem to have featured as much as maybe I would have expected to. Philip Billing, what's the deal there? Is he just not the manager's cup of tea? Is he maybe not fit into the system? Has he not played well?
I think it's those first two. I think Billing has. I think Billing gets a bit of stick as well from some Bournemouth fans because of the fact that he's lanky and he's got a bit of a, you know, his style looks quite laissez-faire. He's not really looks like he's putting in the effort all the time, despite the fact that he's
not all action, is he, all the time? Yeah.
He's not all action, but at the same time, that's probably just the way that he is on the pitch, because you'll find that sometimes when you see his running figures, he's ran more than anyone else on the field. So, you know, he's got it in him to fit into this system, but I think that he's not necessarily what the manager wants from the number 10, which is where he actually sort of started making his name a little bit more under Woodgate in the Championship, and then did very well under O'Neill last season in that kind of role. I think it would work well as one of the two players in the double pivot, but I don't think the manager trusts him enough to play the role that he wants, which is a shame.
Because he's a ball player.
Yeah, it's more the pressing. It's because Iraola is very, while I think he's dialed back what he wants from some players this season, because it was not necessarily the Everton game, it was that Arsenal 4-0 loss that I think just really looked like it was far too easy to get through us, because the pressing wasn't, the triggers weren't right, it wasn't looking like it was working, and Billing was part of that. But then there were other players that were also not doing their roles correctly, and I think at this point, I'm still not entirely sure that he trusts Billing to do exactly what he wants. Yeah. And he's kind of almost in between positions as well, which is silly to say, because the 10 and the 8 are basically aren't too dissimilar. I think he works really well as a box-to-box, but I don't think we necessarily have a box-to-box player in this role. I thought we would. But I think the double pivot, they're told to stay a bit deeper.
It's more like 4-2-3-1, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a 4-2-3-1 that we play mostly. And yeah, in the 10, I don't, because I find that Billing, when I think Billing has been at his best for us when he was under Parker as well in the Championship, he played as the left eight in a 4-3-3. He's box to box combined really well on that left hand side. And if he plays in the 10, he wants to sort of pull onto that left. Yeah, and I don't think as a 10, that is what, I know as a 10, that's not what Iraola wants. He wants a 10 that's going to go onto the left, onto the right, keep switching across to join in the play and find space. And Billing, that's not quite his game. So I think he could do it. And I definitely think there's a space for him. But it is a shame, because he has looked like one of our best players for the last three or four seasons. And I wouldn't be surprised if, whether it's a loan or a permanent deal, he leaves the club in the summer. Because I don't think he'll be too happy with the game time he's getting either. He's a player that has been rumoured to maybe rock the boat a little bit at times. So I wouldn't be surprised if he pushes for a move of some kind in the summer, because he isn't getting that game time at all.
Yeah, ironically, I actually think he would fit perfectly into our system and our team. And again, without being disrespectful, he's probably more of a Sean Dyche player, isn't he? Like, you know, you know what you're going to get from him. He's rough and ready. He'll run in straight lines. He's quite predictable in the way he plays. What you get is what you see. I guess with a more tactically demanding manager who's looking for, as you say, particular types of movements, rotations, stuff like that, it's maybe not quite on his wavelength. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I do think that's about right. But I do think there's quite a few systems he could fit into. I just think that that Iraola just doesn't see what he wants in Billing. He sees it more in Clive, but he sees it more in Alex Scott. and I don't think Alex Scott plays the number 10 role that well. So I just he's just unfavored by the manager. And yeah, it is a shame. But I mean, he only recently signed a new contract with us. So we'd definitely be able to get some good money for him if we did sell him on. I've no doubt about that.
That's one of them things, isn't it? Though these days, particularly signing a new contract, it's like, look, we'll give you a bit more money. It means that we can sell you for a bit more money. Everyone wins thereby.
Ultimately, yeah, exactly.
In that scenario, apart from the club that's looking to buy, potentially Philip Billing. That's really interesting. I guess my last question from a tactical perspective is what, and you've partially answered this question, what's changed since we met at Goodison, and what can we expect to see? It's probably the same question, really. What can we expect to see from this team that we didn't come up against the last time we played?
I would say that it's an interesting one, because for the match against Everton and for against teams that play in the way that Everton do, you don't care about having the ball deep in your own half and passing out from the back. It's very much, it's Sean Dyche. It's a bit what you'd expect. The ball goes long. Once you've got it up there, you can fight for the ball. You'll pick up the second ball. You might work it into a crossing position and get it in the box and just keep trying to create chances in that way. Iraola wants to be able to press an opposition in their third, or at least in the middle third. And that doesn't happen against Everton. And that was one of the things that I think we just weren't... I think Iraola wasn't really prepared for in that game, in that we tried to play around out from the back, you know, to our detriment. Obviously, if you remember the first goal, Zabani slips and you score. Then you can also look at the goalkeeper for the second and third, because he punches stuff a lot when really he, you know, could maybe catch things a bit more often. But still, it just, we never really got forward into attacking positions by building up from the back. And to a bit of my frustration, we have played long ball a hell of a lot more in the second half of the season. To an annoying degree, I would say. I think that the midfield could definitely work the ball better through the thirds, but we are far happier to play long balls. The difficulty is that the way that he wants to play those long balls is to play into the space behind the back line or into the channel. And you'll see occasionally when the opportunity arises, you might see Dom Solanke pull himself to more of a midfield position to try and drag the centre backs, and then other players hook in. You'll find the inside forwards hook in, or you might find Cliver, or whoever the number 10 is, try and run behind. The ball might come to Solanke's feet and he'll hook it around the corner. You'll see those plays happen a few times, but the difficulty there is obviously how much space is Everton necessarily going to give in behind your back line. You don't really want to push up too far. You're happy to have a low block. Pickford is not too bad as you know, to sweep.
As a sweeper keeper, he's not bad, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He's not too bad as a sweeper. So that's why it's a game like this just really doesn't suit the style of Iraola. I think particularly recently, because of all the long balls we've been playing, it should force us to try and play through the opposition a little bit more. But I mean, what we got a little bit lucky with against Luton in our most recent game, where we were 3-0 down, we came back to win 4-3. Luton were shattered. We were able to just absolutely crash over them in the second half, because they'd had so many injuries, particularly to the back line. They were really struggling for quality and stamina. So, you know, we were able to just overwhelm them in the second half. That can't happen against Everton. They just don't play in the same way. You don't really have much of an injury list at the moment, according to what I've looked up. So, you know, it's a pretty full strength side. So the challenge for Bournemouth will be playing through Everton, which we haven't really been able to do all that well most of the season, I would say. And certainly when you look at Everton's defensive record, I had a look up, you've got one of the lowest expected goals against in the league. You tend to be able to do pretty well at preventing high quality chances. And you know, as with most Sean Dyche defenders, you throw yourself in the, they'll throw themselves in the way of anything. So this will be a very tricky one for Bournemouth. I do think that the way that Everton set up is kind of perfect to go up against this kind of style of team. but doesn't necessarily have quite the quality to play through an organized low block. So this could be very low scoring, or it could be just, it could well be one goal that nicks it either way, I see on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with your prediction there in relation to it being low scoring. One, the stat you point towards, that we don't generally give away that many high quality chances, but two, we're also very poor at converting our chances as well. So
it doesn't
necessarily suggest it'll be a high scoring game. I think if, you know, without going into it, Gary Neville, Carragher style, if you like, Monday Night Football, I think if you were going to try and exploit us in between the lines would be the way to do it, because we your inverted wingers, if you call them, or the inside forwards, won't necessarily get that much joy against our fullbacks, because we've got Ben Godfrey, who's naturally a centre-back, and Mikhailenko, who's a very defensive left-back. So you've almost got four centre-backs in there. So we do play very narrow, and therefore the space is actually on the outside rather than the inside. So, I mean, I don't know how attacking your fullbacks are, but that's where a lot of teams have in recent times got at us, is on the overlap. Or when you start stretching us with your fullbacks, that's when our midfielders get pulled out and you can exploit those areas in front of the defence. So I think if you've got cute enough movement inside the pitch, and, you know, as you say, Tom Solanke pulls out, I think in between the lines is where you might get a little bit of joy, but it's whether you can penetrate that, you know, that solid back. It is very much a solid back four. It's old school. Tuck your fullbacks in, very narrow. And therefore, you know, the best teams have done well against us by getting their fullbacks beyond and, you know, getting wide and getting balls in across that, you know, that channel in between the, if you like, the 6-yard box and the penalty spot. And so that really is where I think you can get some joy, but you'll either have to be happy playing on the outside of us or be very cute getting through the, you know, the tight gaps in the middle.
Mm. If we can do that, that would sort of, I would see that bringing a bit closer to the what I would have expected to see more of from our team this season. It was something that sort of, when looking up Iraola's tactics at Vallecano, the kind of thing that you quite like to do is have bombing on fullbacks, and you'd find one of the central midfield, you'd probably find the number 10 and the winger combining to give the ball beyond the defence for the fullback to get to the byline and cross back. But that pretty much hasn't happened this at all. It's for us this season. And that is partly due to the players we've got. I think Max Aarons at right back would have worked quite well in that spot, but unfortunately he's still injured. I don't think he'll be back quite yet, and he's had a mixed bag of a season. Adam Smith is a great stalwart at right back, but he's not got it in him anymore, because he's a bit older now. He's been at the club for a decade. He's not making that bombing on the right back. The one who could is the left back, Milos Kerkez, who's still 19. I think he might have hit 20, but is a very highly rated youngster that I think from rumours are that Man United and Chelsea have been looking at him, but we only brought him in the summer. But he's very all action, and he's a fun player to watch. He loves the slide tackle. A little bit softer, a little bit suspect defensively, more than a bit suspect defensively, I'd say. But he's always willing to run forward and beyond. So if we can maybe get something out of him, then that might be able to make it work. But yeah, it's that's always the thing with a narrow defense like that. You try and force that ball wide and hope that, you know, you've got enough players back and you're organized that any crosses into the box are just going to be pushed straight back out again. And that's the difficulty with dealing with those. So you try the low cross. Sometimes it works. Most of the time it doesn't. But the one interesting sort of selection dilemma that none of us really necessarily know is how it's going to be resolved is if we might play with two strikers. We brought in Enes Ünal, a Turkish striker who scored his first goal for us against Sheffield United or Luton, whichever one, recently. Sheffield United, that was it. And he's been very promising. He's much more of a back to the striker, hold the ball up and lay off kind of number nine, but can sort of fit into the number 10 in that sort of role. He's quite technically gifted. He's also got a decent, he's got a very nice shot on him from his highlight reel, certainly, likes a free kick. But I think him coming on against Sheffield United and particularly Luton really, really changed the game for us. And I would like to see us play with two strikers. And I think that really would sort of shift things up a little bit and allow us to be that more direct. And actually, rather than try and always play into a channel, play to the big man up front that can knock it down, because Unal's much more capable of doing that than Solanke. So that's the one sort of selection dilemma that I'm still thinking. You may well see Kluivert playing the 10, might see Alex Scott there. But most of the squad, I think, picks itself at the moment.
Fair enough. So last question, John, the golden question. Give us a prediction.
Fun one. I think, obviously, at home, our record against Everton is a hell of a lot better than away from home. So I do want to stay a little bit more positive on this one. I'm just wondering, when was the last time we kept a clean sheet? That was away to Burnley. But I think I'll say we'll nick a 1-0. I'm not overly confident on that, but I do want to try and be as positive as we can on this one. And I think I'll go with a nicking a 1-0.
I like to see the opposition be optimistic. I'm going to try and do the same. I'm going to go for 1-1. I do fancy us to get on the score sheet. I don't think it'll be a high scoring game. However, I do think we'll be able to get the breakthrough. And to be honest, I'd take a 1-1. I think it's a difficult place to go. It has been difficult for us to come to use the same way it has been for us to come to us, particularly recently. I know Lampard's last few weeks, it was the end of Lampard, that week that we had Dan.
Yeah.
And pretty much ended him and all the squad. So that was whatever, 6-7 goals in a week, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a 3-0 and a 4-1.
Yeah, it's a one goal.
Yeah.
Marty Gray, I think, come on, didn't he, and scored a decent goal. But that's it. Dreadful few weeks that. And Solanke always scores against us. Ed Red is always likely to he's definitely going to score, so that gives you one. And I think Dominic Calvert-Lewin is long overdue a goal, and I think the couple of weeks break may have done him the world of good, so I'm tipping him to get on the score sheet this week. So I would take a 1-1. Well, listen, John, that was incredibly in-depth, really good insight. I enjoyed that because, again, I've actually enjoyed seeing you climb the table, because I like to see a club that sticks with a manager. I know you've just said that they may have been close to pulling the trigger, but, you know, as you also pointed out, they've made the bed. They almost had to lie in it, didn't they, and see what happens. But they've done that, and credit to the club. And I think you'll go on to bigger and better things. I think you'll kick on next season if you can get a few more players in the summer that fit this style of play and continue to mould it. I think you might see a little bit more of the style that you were looking for that he produced at Vallecano, and hopefully for your sake you do.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
But anyway, after this weekend, best of luck for the rest of the season.
Same to you.
Best of luck in getting some more of your content out. I know how that feels. You just need to have that break, don't you? And come back to it fresh. But anyway, thanks again, John. Really appreciate your time. Any of the Blues, again, give Cherry's Red Army a follow. To any of the Bournemouth fans, hello, and good luck. And we'll catch you soon. Take care, John.
Cheers.
Cheers.